Greetings, and welcome to the Dynamics of Colorism with your host, Dr. Donna Maria Colbreth. You may call us to share your experiences with colorism, to pose a question, or to give a general comment by dialing 914-338-1308. And now, Dr. Colbreth.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to what is now known as Complexity Talk Radio. We're your hosts, Dr. Donna Maria Colbreth and Dr. Julie Jung Kim, and we're coming to you live today, the 26th of February, 2015. And I wanted to start off by saying to all of our listeners that our show was originally titled, named The Dynamics of Colorism Talk Radio, but Dr. Jung Kim and I had a long conversation decided, because we talk about so many issues that are complex in nature, we decided to title the show Complexity Talk Radio, Complexity Live, and we will still continue talking about colorism as well, with race and everything else. How are you, Dr. Jung Kim?
I'm wonderful. I'm happy to be here. Thank you so much. How are you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. We're excited, everyone, about tonight's show. As you know, tonight we're talking about the hidden prejudice in education, understanding how colorism, prejudice, race, and stereotypes can affect the dreams of students of color. And Dr. Jung Kim and I came up with this show, the idea for this show, because it's, number one, so many of the issues that we see as professors, as well as what really prompted my interest was the video. I guess it's like a, what is it, like a documentary, Dr. Jung Kim, the I2MB-DC. It's about a school in Bethesda, Chevy Chase, Maryland, a high school. And it's a video, a documentary, whatever they want to call it, where students put it together. And they're talking about how they feel, how they are treated, the issues that they have to deal with. And a lot of it is it's just heart-wrenching to listen to it. Because these students are dealing with and suffering from all kinds of psychological, emotional, and social issues, because physically they don't look like the predominant group of students. Would that be the right way of classifying it, Dr. Jung Kim?
Yeah, definitely. But they're not. They're talking about the prejudice that they face, just the hardships, the students who are struggling. You know, they definitely feel like they're the minority, and you know, just even all the stereotypes that they. That they daily have to face. And it's just very emotional to watch, and the students are just very emotional. You can tell that this is something that's very painful to them. It's a battle.
And it has to be addressed. So what I'm going to do, listeners, I'm going to play, this is on YouTube, and it's titled I2MB-CC High School. I'm going to play the clip and let you guys listen to it, and then Dr. Jung Kim and I are going to discuss it. So here goes. I hope this works. Can you guys hear it?
I see myself doing this when I get older.
Yes.
And I remember preparing so hard. I did get a roll, and I remember going to the room with one of our practices and one of the girls talking to another guy and saying, oh, she only got in because she's black. And at that moment, I just remember feeling so hurt for the rest of the year throughout the team. I just felt like everyone was looking at me like, oh, I was that black girl who made the team because she was black and not because of merit.
Growing up, I felt like I have had to look like the white man, dress like the white man, talk like the white man in order to be seen as being on the same level as the other white kids. And now I'm in a situation where I just don't know. Like, you have to do all these things, and you have to, it's just so hard for black students, because we feel that we have to go the extra step
yeah, like some of my like black friends would be like, oh, like why do you hang out with these kids all the time? Or like some of my white friends are like, oh, like you hang out with those black kids, like I didn't know that. So it's just kind of like, I feel like sometimes I'm living two lives. You should hang out with kids who make you happy or make you, you know, make you genuinely laugh or make you, you know, want to have fun or want to talk to them. And so just because if that person's white, black, Asian, Hispanic, that shouldn't affect who you're friends with.
I've gotten straight A's for the better part of my life. And my friend, he was new to the school, so he didn't really know me. He was like, oh, you get straight A's? You don't look like you get straight A's. Honestly, I mean, I just laughed in the moment. Then, like, once I thought about it, kind of like a little bit after the conversation, I kept thinking about it. Then it kind of hit me.
Stereotypes are a safety net. People use them because they're easy. They're easy to know without getting to know people. They say, you're this way because of whatever kind of physical features you have or whatever kind of ethnic or social or racial background you have. You have to be this way. And people see that and they're like, okay, well, if everybody is telling me that I have to be this way, then I guess I should be this way.
And I do think that most of the things said are said as jokes. But I think after those jokes are said, they kind of start to step in, and they become more than that.
There's so much more to a person than the color of their skin. I don't even, like, I don't see why, like, in our world, that's how music evolves. It's like thinking something that is darker in tone has less value than something that is lighter.
Prejudice is a human thing, and it's going to happen if you're different in any society. It's a bad thing, but that doesn't mean the people behind it are bad people.
They should be forgiven and taught that there is a better way to think about the world. There's a better way to see other people.
Martin Black at BCC. Some people may say those two words don't belong in the same sentence.
I got in and I saw that I was one of two black people in the class.
I think I'm the only African-American in the
AP Bio class or IB Anthropology class. I'm pretty sure I'm the only black student in that course.
I was the only minority in that class. And so I felt like I did not belong at all.
I feel like I'm usually the one that's left out. I'm just kind of distracted only because there aren't others that are like me or kind of don't see like the fact that I can take a class like that.
I feel like people have this feeling that slavery was a couple hundred years ago, should be back on track, but I feel like people forget that we weren't all holding hands and singing Kumbaya after slavery ended. Like, there were Jim Crow laws, and that ended in, what, the 60s? So we have about 50 years to get to the top, to where we're supposed to be. We were put in this place. It wasn't just us being lazy or unintelligent or got us here to keep you oppressed.
If we want to change the BCC, if we want to change the world, we're going to have to make a difference in ourselves, and we're not people to do that for us.
If we can build towers that are almost taller than a mountain, if we can make cities like New York, if we can make the seven wonders of the world, I think we can move past prejudice. I have faith in that.
So the first step to any problem is, first of all, acknowledging that it exists, and this is what this video is, acknowledging that there's a problem at BCC. And the second step is, to think twice before you say something, to not perceive people in a certain way just because of their race. We need to think more.
Okay, Dr. Jung Kim, what do you think about that?
It's heart-wrenching of anything. I mean, these students who are high-achieving or, that one student who plays the violin or the girl that opens and, she's intelligent, she's articulate, and yet she talks about and she cries saying, everyone looks at me and thinks I earn this spot on this academic team because of my skin color when, you know, I mean, I got it the fair way. It's not off my skin color. It's because I'm smart and I get good grades and I'm very intelligent. But yet, any time that a Black student is successful or a student of color is successful, their students of who are not of color will look at them and think, well, you earned that just based off your skin color. You know, and it's just a big shaming factor, or almost like the white elephant in the room, like that doesn't exist. Black, Hispanic, minority students, they can't be successful, they can't be smart. They obviously got here because of somebody, like, you know, feeling sorry for them or just needing the token Black person or Hispanic person to represent a minority group. But just to imagine feeling that way day after day and just people looking at you and stereotyping based off your race. Honestly, there's nothing that they can do because it's like a long struggle. And as much as they, you know, try to say, no, this is who I am, and they have proven it through their grades or through their musical skills or any of their abilities, they're always going to be judged because of their skin color and typecast as not successful, failing, not musical, always being judged by things that they think this minority group is not capable of doing.
Yeah, and it's so sad. It's just sad and it's wrenching because when the one young lady talked about how they feel they have to go the extra step to prove that they're on the same level and that they can do the work, and no matter how hard they work, it always goes back to, oh, well, you're in, or you are successful, or they're giving you these grades because you're Black. And, I mean, that is hurtful. Then one young lady would really lift me a bit when she said that her whole life she's felt like she's had to talk like the white man, dress like them, look like them, in order to be seen on the same level as white kids. And
yeah.
It was sad when she said, I don't know who I am. That's what caught me. Because here's this, I would say maybe 16, maybe, I think they're probably seniors, 16, 17 years old, and they're dealing with this at such a young age. And what makes it so bad, Dr. Duncan, we're in the millennium. We're in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And we still see how students of color are still going through so many issues. And what I don't think people realize is that psychologically it is damaging. It's like there was an article in the Huffington Post last year that said, yes, schools do discriminate against students of color. And it goes on in the article to talk about the psychological pain and the issues that the students have to deal with. And what bothers me is that, and, you know, and this is a twofold thing. It's just like in the work environment, you see, like, say it's a big company, or like for the federal government or some colleges, you see the Black Faculty Association, the Black student groups. And people wonder why they form these groups. They form the groups, number one, because of the way they're being treated. And I think it's more like the support that they need psychologically, emotionally, socially, in order to bear, you know, what most of us would deem as unbearable, to have to live through that. So my concern was with the students at this particular school, and this is just one out of many, and I'm in Maryland, and I know how Maryland is, by the way, but what makes it so bad is that this is a high school. And if these students are feeling the pain and all this stuff, you know, and I tried to search their website, and maybe I didn't look correctly, so if I didn't find it and it is out there, somebody correct me. But I didn't see where the school had taken any efforts to bring about a change, to try and, you know, and my other issue is with the parents of these students of color, you know, the parents need to get together with the administrators, the school, and the students, and they really need to talk about these issues, but it's like someone said to me earlier today, not all white people are prejudiced. Not all of them stereotype. Not all of them are racist. So what happens, and he's a white gentleman, he said to me, it puts them in a precarious situation where they're very uncomfortable because they have to, they these individuals who do not feel negative against these young people or people of color, they're feeling, oh, gosh, this is an awkward moment because now I have to confront my white counterparts who are racist, who do stereotype, who do judge them based on their race or skin color, and who do treat them disparately.
Right.
So, you know, it's just sad. And then when one guy talks about how his white friends were asking him why he hangs out with the black kids. And you know what, mm-hmm. it took me back to the movie Hairspray. And
oh, yeah.
And Hairspray, that was the big thing with the black and the white kids and the issues. But, I mean, what do you think, Dr. Jung Kim, you know, with these students dealing with these issues, and we're going to talk about it, everybody, and we're going to talk about it as far as colorism goes, prejudice, race, and stereotypes, will break them down. Or we may just include them in a whole general conversation. But, Dr. Jung Kim, what do you think? Go ahead.
Oh, so what I was going to say is, I think, you know, it just goes against everything that even, like, black students or students of color have tried to do. Like, anything they try to do is seen as unsuccessful. You stomp, you know, they can't be too smart, because that's not what, you know, black students are like. But at the same time, if they're too much of a troublemaker, then, you know, that's just expected of a black student. And I think there needs to be a time where the put-downs and the judgments and the racial stereotyping just need to stop. I think we as a society, as educators, as administrators, just need to look at things and look at the harm that's causing our students. Because, you know, there's going to be a time where our students of color are going to say, forget it. I'm throwing my hands up in the air. This is the way people are just going to judge me. Then why don't I just become it? Like, why do I even charge better? Why do I even try to better myself? And, you know, looking at the video, it's obvious these students are not faking it. So that was some of the comments that I read too. Oh, these students are faking it. They're being too emotional. Look at those people crying. Like, it's just all a setup. No, you could tell that this is real pain in their eyes, in their tears. This is a struggle that they have to face day after day after day. And, you know, it's kind of like society saying, shame on you for being too smart, for being a high-performing student who gets good grades, or makes it to an academic team, because, you know, black students, Hispanic students can't do that. You're just not smart enough, you know. Why don't you just stay with what you're good at, being a football player, playing basketball? But, you know, you can't break that stereotype. But that's just not, it's, you know, that's just not what minority students are supposed to be doing. Like, so kind of like putting you back in your cage, stay there, and you know, like, how dare you almost try to become something more? And we need to stop that as a school. We need to address it and say, you know, yes, this does exist. Students can be smart. You know, colored students can be smart. And, you know, we can also show this on TV shows that, you know, black, Hispanic, Asian students can all be successful. They don't have to be typecast. And so once we break this typecasting that exists in society, I think we'll have more of an open conversation and, you know, everyone, and I don't want to say this, we'll be on the same playing field, but I think even saying that at this point of saying these conversations will put people on the same playing field, because I think, honestly, with the way things are going, our minority students will never be on the same playing field. There will always be some kind of judgment or discrimination, but at least we can make some kind of progress, is my hope.
Right, I agree, because that's what they need. They need to make progress, and they need to seriously consider the fact that these students are really suffering and they're in pain. And
yeah.
So, you know, they have like this double whammy. You know, they're in a predominantly white school. They're students of color. They're treated disparately. And here's the biggest problem that people don't get. We know that some of it is intentional and conscious, but I think the most dangerous part of this treatment for students of color, when it affects your dreams, is when people do it or participate in acts or treat them disparately, and it is done unconsciously and unintentionally, because that's just who they are.
Yeah.
And I think that does more damage. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely damaging, like I said before, because, I mean, it's hurting their self-esteem. It's like these students, I mean, obviously the students on there are very intelligent, but I mean, they're working hard academically or musically, you know, to get ahead, to show that they're talented and gifted, but that they're on merit. And they're even bending backwards. They're trying to act. They're just trying to fit in, and they're still not being accepted. And I think we need to, you know, really take a look at the racial stereotyping, racial profiling that has become a large part of our educational system, and make it, like Dr. Colberth, you and I have talked about this, we need to make this a national dialogue, conversations to say, you know what, this is a powerful video. Now, what are we going to do? We're just going to watch it and, like, talk about it? No, we need to make a national dialogue and say, okay, now what are we going to do to make this better? Because, you know, the next video that goes along with this is, like, I, too, am Harvard. Wow, minority students can go to Harvard and Ivy League school. I mean, that's something that, you know, people don't think is possible. They think, oh, if minority students make it to Harvard or one of those Ivy League schools, well, obviously they were there to fill a quota. Affirmative action, that's what you hear all the time. Not there on their merit. It was affirmative action. They needed a minority student to fill the seats. That's the only reason that they were accepted. And, you know, we can't make that assumption. We can't make that judgment. There are a lot of students of color who, yes, are actually intelligent. And so wake up, world. Be aware and stop making assumptions, because there are so many, you know, minorities are struggling. They're hurt. They're feeling pain. But they have all earned their seat fairly. It's not because they've earned it because of their skin color. They have earned it with merit. They are intelligent. They can be good musicians. They do have talent.
And they do. You know what bothers me, Dr. John Kim? It bothers me when a person of color tries to bring attention or bring up an issue that is treating, you know, involving race, color, stereotypes in a negative sense, especially of people of color. And there's always this one person in the crowd who's like, oh, that's not true. It's just like some of the, I was just looking at some of the negative comments that were written about the video where this young person is totally, only thing he picked out of the video was that this is exaggerated. BCC is nothing like this. You don't have to dress a certain way. You don't have to act a certain way. He missed the point, and that's the problem. And I've seen a lot of people do that. They miss the point. And it's just like the old saying goes, it doesn't have to have a racist intent to have a racist outcome. And what they need to understand is that there's more in this little video, or whatever you want to call it, that's larger and bigger than the dressing and talking. It's about how they're being treated, how they're stereotyped, and how they feel. And the problem here is that absent the school or the Board of Education for that particular area, unless they wake up and realize that this is an issue, and until they start having these dialogues and the conversations, these students are going to continue for generation after generation, class after class, year after year, to experience these same issues. And what makes it bad is that they graduate from high school, they go into a college classroom where they deal with a professor who's totally out of touch with the reality of the experiences of what students of color deal with, so they get another whammy slapped at them. And they graduate from college, if they're lucky and they're successful and they find a job, they go into the work environment and they deal with it again. So you're looking at a young man or young woman, a student of color, who is going from elementary, middle, high school, through college, into the work world, only to find out that no matter how successful they have been, the grades, the achievements, that they're still marginalized because of the color of their skin. So this sends a bad message, a wrong message, to the younger generations who may be up and coming. And I really, at the high school level, in order to prepare these students for the real world, because a lot of them may not go to college. They may go out and get, you know, start working or go into a training program. There needs to be some dialogue there. And it seems like this country's refusal to really address race, color, stereotypes, and how students of color and just people of color in general treated. But there needs to be a dialogue. There need to be groups holding conversations, focusing in on these issues and coming up with strategies and ideas. Okay, how are we going to deal with this? What are we going to do to help these students deal with the psychological stress that they're dealing with because of the way they're treated, because of their race or color or how they look.
Going along with what you said, like, if you look at all the comments, you know, like, there are a lot of people who are attacking this instead of seeing it as awesome, inspiring. Wow, the truth is coming out, you know. There's people who are like, oh, it's such an exaggeration because if they're supposedly smart or high caliber students, well, what's wrong with them? Like, they don't have to dress that way. They don't have to talk that way. So, you know, why are they putting that pressure on themselves? The thing is, like, I mean, they feel they're missing the, so all of those people who are saying negative things, they're missing the bigger message. These students feel like they have to do that to, you know, get to be seen as having some kind of merit, that they belong there. And, you know, for you to, like, just try to find something wrong with what they said on the video is just, you're missing the point. And another thing is, you know, we really have to realize how our actions and the words, the way we treat the students of color, is really hurting them. I mean, we honestly need to have more conversations. We need to think more with even our eyes and our words. And, you know, and instead of saying, oh, well, you know, you're there because of your skin color, we need to say, wow, isn't that awesome? We need to embrace them. We need to realize, and this is something that you and I always talk about, how are we going to help our students of color to make it to the next level? You know, why is it that these students are in high school or in middle school and already getting knocked down by society, by their own people of color? How dare you, you know, try to act like you're smart? How dare you try to act white? If you're too smart, then you're acting too white. You know, and to even put that kind of judgment or phrase upon a person, because what does white mean? Oh, it's because someone's, like, musically talented or actually academically smart, so that means white? No, we need to get rid of that kind of language and say, no, a black person can be smart and can be on high merit academically, musically. That's not a white thing. That's a possibility for all students of color, all people of color. So don't make it a white thing. We need to change this mindset because, you know what? Like these students on the video, we have a lot of successful, smart, musically talented people who are worth noticing, and it's not a white thing. They are individually, they're people of color who deserve to be recognized. It's not a white thing. We need to get rid of that language.
You think we do? We do, definitely.
Yeah.
They stop saying that you're acting white or that's so white. And because, and it's like I said, it's like you always say, and I love to quote you on this. By the way, everyone, Dr. Jung Kim was the first person that I've ever heard talk about one size does not fit all. And one size does not fit all. And when I think it's insulting and offending for someone to think that all black people are supposed to act a certain way, all Asians or Latinos. And again, it goes back to them not understanding and not being aware. And I hate to say this, Dr. Jung Kim, but it all keeps going back to diversity. They need to include first of all, need to have healthy discussions, number one. And number two, need to include and incorporate diversity in their high school curriculum. A class, make it a required class if they take me, you know, freshman year, or they could take a junior or senior year, either, or a sophomore. But there needs to be a course that all students take about diversity, and I don't believe, and I think one of the biggest mistakes, and I may be wrong, but this is just my opinion, one of the biggest mistakes with people trying to train and teach about diversity is that they all want to keep focusing on tolerance and telling people you have to learn to tolerate people. And for me, Dr. Jung Kim, when you say tolerate, that's saying, oh, I just put up with you because they said I have to. Where I think if you change and away from tolerating intolerance and said, learn to try and understand, try to embrace, or even just say, you know, try to imagine how you would feel if you were that particular individual and with that skin color, looking like them. But I think the tolerance is the damaging factor when they're trying to teach and train about diversity, because personally, I don't be tolerated. I don't want someone to put up with me or work, go with me every day and have to tolerate this black woman, because by tolerate, I'm teaching them to change their attitude, behavior, thoughts, opinions, or stereotypes. You're saying you have to put up with this person because we said you have to. So you tolerate the black girl sitting next to you, even though you hate black people. No, how about we say, let's learn to try and understand, to try and embrace, and try and be more compassionate, or whatever words we want to use. But I think we need, what do you think about that? Because I really think tolerate needs to be thrown out with the bathwater.
Oh, yeah, I hate that. And yet that's a very common word that you use when dealing with minorities, is we need to have more tolerance. We need to tolerate them. What does that mean? I mean, why do they not see that as offensive?
You know,
we are not here to be tolerated, to be appeased. We are here to be treated equally. You know, and so going along with that, what kind of makes me mad is, and I have to blame the media, or yeah, pretty much the media. You know, with the way that they report information about, like, African-Americans especially, you know, they don't report, you know, like the video, there are a lot of successful African-American minority students. And a lot of them rise up academically or musically. And, you know, they are, like, in the top percent. They do very well. But that is not reported. And, of course, like, but what is reported is always the bottom half of, you know, the minority group, African-Americans, especially black people. Oh, well, they're druggies, they're in gangs. Well, let me tell you something else. In China, that lower half of China's population too, they're hooked on opium. Does anyone really address that? But Asian students, they are so successful academically. East Asian, yes. South Asian, no. They're illiterate. Does anyone really address that? Well, no, because it's the black people who are illiterate. Right. But, you know, so talking, and I know my Asian friends are going to beat me up for saying this, but, you know, it's like, it's true. They're, Asian people, Southeast Asian, they're not successful. They're not doing well in school. But yet, in the newspapers and in schools, oh, Asian people are so successful. They're the model minority. Well, that's not true. Not all Asians. It's the East Asians. Well, the black people, look at them. They're failing. They're illiterate. They're on drugs. So are the Chinese people. So are, you know, like, who's not, but they're not reporting that.
No, they
just
don't.
Want
You're right.
to report how black people are failing. They're not smart. They're druggies. They're going into prison. Well, there's other groups, too, that have students and people who are doing that, too. But why do you keep reporting only on the black people who are causing problems, you know, and make it seem like they're the ones who are causing problems in the society? How about finding the people who are successful and reporting them? Because you know what? They do exist. They're not like unicorns. They do
You're
exist.
Right.
And so let's bring in some more positive role models into the news, into society.
That's right. And exactly. And let's stop the negativity. It just seems, let me give you a good example. On the news today, and I think yesterday in Maryland, they were talking about having the police officers in the school armed with, you know, being able to carry the handguns inside the building. Because the school, the situation in the schools, you know, with the violence and the student fighting and everything is just so terrible. And, you know, and there are a lot of people who are against that. Then there are people, you know, who are forward. But here's the point, Dr. Jung Kim, what in the heck are they doing inside the schools to try? See, there's, to me, and I'm not in the public school system, so I cannot tell you what it's really like. But just for me, looking at the, hearing the news, talking to parents of students in these schools, in the inner cities, my question is, okay, well, what is the school doing to try and put programs in place or a curriculum in place that changes the behavior? If, you know, and I understand that they have to focus in on these tests that they have to take, but I think there needs to be more focus in on whether or not they're turning out well-rounded young people who can go out and positively contribute to society without having to go on through, like, a living hell just to get there. So when I'm looking, I'm talking to the young girls in my community and the young men, and Dr. Jung Kim, it makes me want to burst into tears because the stories that they're telling me, what they go through in school, the lack of really good activity, especially in the inner cities for black children. And then the programs that they do have are so superficial from what I'm being told. I haven't exactly, like, investigated any of these programs or looked into them, but I'm taking them on the words of the students and the parents. But they're not doing enough. They're not doing enough. Whether it's a student dealing with race and color and race or color issues, or where they're stereotyped or marginalized. It's like the remember the study issue we talked about before, where black girls in schools were being treated disparately at a higher rate. There was one, I think, recently in Baltimore, Maryland, maybe this incident happened last year, a couple of months ago, where a girl got into a fight with a school police officer or guard or something, and the police officer allegedly really beat the girl up pretty bad. You know, my concern, they were saying that how these black girls have these negative attitudes, they're loud. Basically, they're saying, quote, they were ghetto, end quote. Loud, they were ignorant, they were rude, they have no respect for authority, they have attitude problems. So my response to them is, well, what are you doing to help change all of that? And this is something we address in our book of affirmations for girls of color, you know, about attitudes and positive thought processes. But Dr. Jung Kim, let's just say for the sake of argument, if these girls do have attitudes like that, what are you doing to change them, to help them advance one in a positive light? Are you talking to them? Do you have any programs? Do you have any classes? What are you doing to help them change their behavior? And not only that, take into consideration, it's like we talked about with our success program for students. You know, what do you have in place to help them? You know, a lot of the students come from homes where, as a school superintendent in Maryland, Baltimore City Schools noted that a lot of the students are homeless. They come from environments where they don't know where they're going to sleep the next night, where they come to school hungry, or they go to bed hungry. So it's a big issue. So imagine this, Dr. Jung Kim. Let's just say you have a student who may be going through a homeless situation or a resident situation where there's no stability or security there. The parents may not be on top of their game. So from my standpoint, that's where the village needs to come in and pick up the slack and say, okay, everybody in the village is responsible for helping these children reach higher ground in life. So the village consists of everybody in the community, family members, even peers, the students, the administrators, even the school board, the superintendent of the school. They're all part of the community, of the village. But what are they doing to make a difference? I get so disgusted when I see so many young black males and black females who basically, in my opinion, Dr. Jung Kim, they've just been thrown away because nobody is saying to them, you have worth, you have value, you can be whatever it is you want to be in life. It's through hard work, dedication, and we will support you to help you get there. But if that's not being done, or the graduation rates they claim are so high, okay, if the rates, graduation rates are high, can you actually guarantee that these students have college-ready skill sets to walk into a classroom? So instead of them just passing this through to get them out, I think they need to step back, take a good look, and remember that just because they're graduating, I mean, I've heard stories where students are just basically passed to get rid of them, graduate them, get them out. But for students of color, this hampers their growth because, I mean, Dr. Jung Kim, I told you we were in Home Depot, and young people working in Home Depot, they were all black, of course, and they could barely function on their jobs because they just couldn't understand. They weren't able to reason, were not able to think critically. Logic wasn't kicking in. And it bothered me because I see a lot of young black kids employed in these minimum wage positions. I see a lot of them going to community colleges and graduating and going into jobs with less than average pay. And I don't see where anyone's encouraging them. In other words, like you said, there's a large number of students of color who are doing extremely well, and we applaud them. But the concern is for that segment of the population who continue generation after generation to, you know, continue to sink down. You know, look at the achievement gap, for example. So, I mean, what do you think about all of these issues? Because race color and the stereotypes do defer their dreams. And I think until society as a whole, especially schools, realize this, these students are still going to have problems that can really affect them. So what do you think? What do you think about all this?
I think we need to stop typecasting our students, especially students of color. Because first of all, eventually, as our society is changing, you know, students of color, people of color, we were once the minority. We are the majority now. So right there, that's enough reason to, like, pay attention to us, people of color, more, and not put these expectations or put us in a box saying, oh, you don't look like someone who knows how to play the violin very well. Well, let me tell you something. When Jeremy Lin, an Asian basketball player, went to go play basketball, a lot of people said, what? Asian person, like, going to play basketball, he needs to stay at school. And, you know, Asian people are good at academics, but basketball, whatever. He's never going to make it as a, you know, like a professional basketball player, but he did. Same thing. I think, you know, don't typecast people of color, and say that this is what you're supposed to be. You know, your minority group, like black people, you're supposed to be gangbangers. You know, you're supposed to get pregnant at a young age. You're supposed to be like druggies. You know, no. We need to see that everything, anything is possible. These students put their minds to it, they can achieve it. Now, the issue is, as educators, as people in society, as adults, we've all have been through this already. We know the difficulty of getting through school, of getting support, getting mentorship. What are we going to do now? Dr. Colbert and I talk about this all the time. We need mentorship. We need someone to walk beside these students and say, you know what, I remember being there. I want to help you. There was no one there for me. So think about all the things that you didn't have, you wish that you had. I mean, I'm sure we all said, well, I turned out okay. Yeah, you turned out okay, but what if you had a mentor? What if you had that person to say, you know what, I believe in you. Ooh, what are you facing right now? Oh, a teacher that thinks you plagiarized, but you really did your own work? Oh, things like, because, you know, you're a minority or something, or a person of color, that you can't write better. Well, how do you address that? You know, like,
that's
someone
right.
Who believes in them and gives them, like, says, you know, I believe in you, speaks encouraging, affirming words to them, helps them through every step of their academic or their personal goals. Okay, so you're in poverty, or you're living in a negative environment. Okay, how are you going to get out of that? Okay, so you kind of messed up your high school career, but you do want to go to college. Oh, but you don't have the money. Okay, so what are your options? Let's talk about this. And, you know, do you have to work? What does it mean to fill out financial aid papers? You know, what does it mean that you have to write an essay? And how do I help you to write an essay? Because, you know what, people who are not people of color, they've had parents who have all gone to college, right, and helped them through every step of their academic career. We even have a lot of, like, you know, students, not minority students, but students who are not of color, they're legacy kids. They get into college because they're legacy kids, you know, and that's how they get in. So we need to, like, open doors, give them the opportunities, the possibilities, put it in front of them and say, yes, you can achieve this. You don't, all because you don't know the answers to this and it seems really hard to fill out that application to go to college, you know what? But this is just a short-term, like, obstacle you're going to have to face, but let me walk you through what you need to do. You know, because even simple steps like that, they don't know. Or you took your SAT, you messed up. It's not, you know, like, nobody has told them, oh, you can retake it. Oh, that's a possibility. What does that mean, I have to retake it? Like, just even having that small conversation, you know, to help them, to mentor them, to affirm them. And that's something that they just really need. Because you know what? Every day, like the kids in this video, they're facing battles from other people, from the people who they think will accept them, even from their own families. They're just saying, you know what? It's easier just to stay where people think you should be and belong. Don't rise up. Don't stick out. Just, you know what? Be happy. working at Pizza Hut or working in a store, you know. And the thing is, too, like, when people try to be successful, when students of color try to be successful, it's like, they're like, how dare you? How dare you? You think you're better than me? You think you're better than us? You better
right.
take a look at yourself. You're a black person or you're a Hispanic person. How dare you try to rise above, like, you know, what we're told to be like in society. How dare you try to better your life by going to college? Oh, and by the way, if anyone tries to go to graduate school, whoa, what's wrong with you? What about paying those bills? Who's going to pay those bills? You don't care about your family? How about you get a job? Stop dreaming about going to graduate school and bettering your life, because that's selfish of you to only think about yourself.
And I'll tell you something interesting. I remember years ago when I was a equal opportunity officer for the state, I remember my supervisor saying to me when I told him I was going into the doctorate degree program because I wanted the specialization in HR so I could go into examining colorism in the work environment because I had so many cases dealing with that. And his response to me was, well, now he's an attorney. Because I worked in the legal, in the systemic unit in litigation, the legal department systemic unit, and I handled all systemic cases. And I remember him saying to me, well, I don't understand why you'd want to go get a doctorate degree. I mean, you already have a master's degree. That should be enough for you. So this was a white mm-hmm. man saying this to me as a black woman. And I remember I said to him, I said, I can't believe you just said that to me. And I said, you know, you have your Juris Doctorate degree. You're an attorney. You're practicing, you know, in your field, in the area you're passionate in. And I knew that I didn't want to stay there at that position and work as a equal opportunity officer, too, for the rest of my life. That's not what I wanted to do. That wasn't me. And he had a problem because I actually wanted to get a doctorate degree. And he just thought I was being ridiculous and mm-hmm. unrealistic. And I remember, you know, if I had been a weak person or someone who just, you know, like you said, their students of color are told, you know, why do you want to do this? Stay where you are. And I think that is what contributes to them remaining or keeping them invisible. You don't have to step out into the real world and deal with the high power or get involved, A, B, C, or D. Stay here in this little low level. You know, stay here in the little box that we put you in. And you stay mm-hmm. in this box, and you'll be okay. You'll be okay in the box because that is where you belong. And
right.
what people don't understand is that comments like that, you're tearing down dreams. You know, so many students can start high school, could be in the sophomore, junior year, and have dreams for a bright future. But if they're not given the right guidance or direction, if they have teachers, or even family members or peers or anyone around them, you know, telling them that they're being unrealistic with their dreams, you know, it's going to defer the dream. They're going to lose hope. And on top of that, what I think a lot of people don't understand, Dr. Jung Kim, is other than the race and the color and the stereotypes that students of color have to deal with, they also have to deal with, on top of that, peer pressure from their friends,
mm-hmm.
bullying,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
bugs and crime, the manners, respect issue, teen pregnancies. There are so many other issues that they have to deal with. So if you take an average student, one who's white, one who is black, they may deal with bullying, drugs, peer pressure, but add on top of that, students of color are dealing with the other issues of their race and the skin color and being marginalized and treated disparately or labeled and stereotyped simply because of the color of their skin. And it's like the young girl said in the movie, the video we watched earlier, she said at BCC, black does not equal smart. If you're black and you go here, you're not supposed to be a smart student.
Right.
When I taught over at University of District of Columbia, I remember dealing so many times with so many young black girls who were in college now. And the class was a social science class. The other one, I think it was ethics. And I just remember so many dialogues and conversations with these young women. But the biggest problem, Dr. Jung Kim, was that these girls were not prepared for college. Too many of them had been told, like, why are you even doing that? You have a job. Stay there. But the jobs they had were minimum
right.
wage jobs. And then
right.
the double whammy, you know, the double whammy came in when these students who were going to this college went there to get direction and help and, you know, get a good education and graduate, and they weren't being given the support there by the school.
Right.
And so imagine all the issues that they've already dealt with only to get into college to find out that you're not given the direction and the guidance. This is why it's so important. Dr. John Kim and I keep talking about this, mentoring. And through NGWCC, that's what we're putting together so young people can have mentors who can mentor them through, help them get someone to talk to, someone with whom they can identify and who can identify with them to help them realize, okay, these are the issues that you're dealing with. This is how you can overcome them. And it goes back to our success again. You know, students of color need to be supported, uplifted, challenged, of course, and communicate with them, empower them, and stimulate their minds. Because when you watch like a video or whatever you want to call it, we watch of these young people, and when the young lady started crying, Dr. Jung Kim, that is so real. Her pain and her hurt. And as one of them noted, I don't even know who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And who am I supposed to be? Imagine this, Dr. Jung Kim, if she never participated in the video, if she never expressed to anyone how she really felt, you're looking at the possibility of this young lady falling into a deep depression, having psychological and emotional issues, end up hanging with the wrong crowd for the wrong reason, because she feels this is all I can be. Because when I try to propel myself forward by performing well academically, I'm still treated disparately.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's larger than what people are willing to admit, and I get so annoyed when they do want to talk about these issues affecting students of color. What bothers me is that it's fine to put together a team or group of people, but when you're pulling people to put on teams and in groups to work on these issues, and these are the same people who are involved, who are part of the problem, you need fresh blood, you need new blood.
Right.
You need to bring people from all walks of life in and not just keep pulling the status quo, because the people in the status quo positions are the ones who are part of the problem that we're dealing with, and they have done nothing to try and correct it, fix it, or speak out on it. And I think that's one of the problems we keep doing in this society.
Right.
It's just what we're doing with the National Girls and Women of Color Council. We're looking to bring women from all walks of life together. We're looking to get leaders of organizations, educators, regardless of what level they're at, even business people to get involved and see that, okay, these are issues, but we need people who are affected by it, Dr. Jung Kim. We need people from Main Street in America to deal with it. We don't need, because you keep pulling the others in who are part of the problem, what is getting solved?
Right.
And I don't see anything changing. You know, the achievement gap is an issue that is still talked about. So we need to have a think tank of like-minded individuals who are interested in bringing about the change, you know, putting together a good, strong curriculum that'll say, hey, this is what you need to implement here in these schools, or these are the type of groups. And then it goes back to where the gentleman I spoke today was saying to me, well, if you do that, Dr. C, then you're going to end up with segregated groups, which is true. But until you are ready to address the issues that these young people are dealing with when they go to these predominantly white colleges or even high schools and communities, they need to have people with whom they can identify with, who understand. So if you have a group of, say, 25 black students in a school, let's just say these numbers are really weird, but let's say 500 students total in the school, and only 25 of them black, there's something wrong there. So of course they're going to want to cling together and support each other because that's what they need, especially when they're being treated disparately because of their race and or color. What do you think?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, you like you said before, even though students, there are like a small number of students of color, they cling to each other because it's almost like they have to cling to each other because it's kind of like a battle, not a battleground, but, you know, you see that all the time in high school settings where in the lunchroom cafeteria, you have all the little groups together. You have, you know, not only like the athletes together, the cheerleaders like sitting at one table, but you also have the black students all sit together, the Hispanic students all sit together. And any kind of intermingling, you just know that that does not happen. You stay with your group, and if you dare try to go into another group, even if it's like another athletic group, because you're an athlete, it's like it's looked down upon. It's like, how dare you leave this group? Like, what's wrong with you? You think you're better than us? And I don't know. Like, I wish definitely there was more of intermixing of people, just for the reason that, like, you and I have the diversity group, because I think it would break down a lot of the stereotypes, the prejudice that people have towards each other. And I think it would make people realize, like, oh, wow, like, that person who's black is actually really nice, is not trying to sell me drugs, is not, you know, part of a gang, but just a real person trying to make it at school. And that's what we want, is just people, even though you're divided by your race, you're all human. And you're all flesh and blood. And you need to have these opportunities to have these open conversations, because once you get into the real world, I mean, you're going to face more people of different races. And, you know, for you to say, oh, well, you know, I'm just not going to talk to them, that's kind of being ignorant, and that's not realistic in any kind of way. Or even making comments like, oh, you're being so white. Or if a black person comes to an interview and is articulate, well, oh, that person's like very white. Oh, that person's an Oreo, black on the outside and white on the inside. You know, and just even getting rid of all those little names, you know, Oreo, banana, yellow on the outside, you know, white on the inside. Like, I mean, it's just people of color can be articulate. They can be smart. They can be successful. And I want to say that if we have these conversations and we don't put up these kind of like assumptions about people, these prejudice bias, you know, it will help our people of color to like rise up in the world of the work field. Because right now we have that cement ceiling. That's very difficult to break, or even like the glass ceiling. We can look in, but just to break it, it's so difficult. And if we do break it, in some ways, that glass shatters on us and puts us into pieces, because you know what? People are like, what's wrong with you? Oh, they just hired you. You know, there's so many ramifications. Oh, well, you didn't really get that job because of your merit. You got it because they needed a person of color. They need you to be that token, you know, black person or Asian person. So it's not off your merit that you rose up in that position. So it's like, whatever we do, it's wrong. Someone's going to have some kind of criticism towards us because, you know, not because of our race. Like, we don't deserve it. And what's that going to do? It's going to hurt our self-esteem. We're not going to feel worthy. No matter how hard we work, no matter how hard we try to fit in, nothing is good enough. So therefore, knowing that this exists even for adults, like, we have to make sure that we are helping our young students of color. You know, saying, right, you know, this will happen, but you know what? You are someone who can make a difference. Putting that affirmation back into them, saying, you're going to face a lot of negativity from family, from friends, from people of your own race, and people who are not of your own race. And so what are you going to do? You got to stand firm. You got to believe in yourself. You got to fight through it, you know?
And what's good, because... Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to finish by saying, like, so often when you're in that position, it does feel easier just to be like, you're right, I give up. But, you know, we got to fight through it, fight through the hardship, and, you know, be a leader and be the change that we want to happen. Because so many people after us, you know, we're going to be paving the way, and that's exactly what we need. Just someone just to pave the way and affirm and do it and not get knocked down.
Mm-hmm. That is so true. And I think once they realize this, I think then we'll start seeing change eventually, because right now, as you know, with us working with girls and women of color, when you inspire them, you motivate them, you tell them they can do it, that it's going to be, you know, maybe hard work. When you tell them this and you instill that in them in positive, it does make a difference. So students of color need that support so that their dreams are not deferred, so they can understand that even if they do go through an experience, they can be resilient and strong enough to bounce back their own and know that, okay, I dealt with. And I think a lot of things, it's like noted in the video, what I pulled from the video is that these young people, especially the young girls, they don't know how to deal with it. And it's a, so they need mentors, they need support, they need encouragement. They need for people to stand behind them. And this is where the school administrators come in, and this is why it's so important when we start talking about the students of color, their dreams being deferred. You know, they need to see faculty, teachers, and administrators who look like them as well. Because what does it say? It's just like when I was growing up and I went to school, and the little books we had with Dick, Jane, and I think Sue or Sally, whatever her name was, they were all white children.
Mm-hmm.
They need to see if, you know, whatever books or whatever they're using in schools, and I don't know, should, and I do hope that they have this, that they are diverse books, that they include a diverse group of characters, that the students are taught about understanding and embracing, but they need to see faculty, staff, administrators, advisors, mentors, who look like them, counselors, everything. And because I think it eases the tension somewhat. The ability to communicate.
So definitely. So definitely, like, you know, even myself, you know, I teach in a classroom where, you know, like half are Hispanic and half are Black. And then I have some, you know, students who are not minority or people of color. And, you know, the first day of class, they walk in, they shuffle in actually, and they sit there slouched thinking, oh, it's just another class where you're really not going to have expectations of me as a professor. And when I do challenge them and I look them in the eye and I push them to say, you know, your voice is important. And I'll even say that, you know, as a class, and I'll look directly at them, or I'll make it my intention that when I'm giving them feedback on assignment, I always say, you know, this wasn't right. Like, your grammar, punctuation wasn't right, but you know what? Don't give up hope. Remember that writing takes practice, and you can do this. And, you know, just try to improve like one thing each week, and I know you can do it. I believe in you. And what I see is, as weeks progress and I'm giving these small affirmations to students, either verbally or through my feedback to them in their homework assignments, they're no longer slouching in their chairs or like not looking at me or not making eye contact or shuffling their feet into the classroom. I mean, honestly, like, not, it's not about me and I'm not pumping myself up, but they're walking in with their shoulders back, their heads up, they're making eye contact with me. And I've had so many students who even have written, they write to me like, you know, I had this kind of weekend, it was really rough. And I think sometimes students just need someone just to say, I believe in you. And okay, so you're having a hard time. Let's do this together. Okay, just try to make these small improvements. Okay, so this is what you need to work on. Can you do it? Small steps. Let's improve on this. I believe in you. You know, or just saying, okay, all these other students, they're talking. I want to know what you think. Your voice is important, your opinion. And, you know, they'll be hard. You see them, like, first of all, shocked and then scared, like, oh, my goodness, like, everyone's going to hear me speak and they may not agree with what I have to say. And, oh, my goodness, I sound so stupid because I never really talk in class. Like, usually I just try to blend in or I put my head down, but what's the use? Like, my teacher already thinks that I'm just going to drop this course or I'm not smart enough. But once you show that you believe and that you care about what they think and that their voice matters, like, you know, they will work harder. they do, you know, you just want to make them feel important, that they're not just another number or person taking up a seat in your classroom, that you believe in them. And, yeah, if it requires you to invest a little bit more time to help them or write that little extra email like, hey, you weren't in class today, where were you? You know, I missed you, that kind of thing. Like, it drastically makes a difference. And I wish, and you know, that's why as teachers, number one, we need to weed out the ones who are burned out. And number two, we need to bring in more faculty of color who will embrace, who will encourage our students. And let me tell you, I'm not blaming faculty administrators. I know it's a hard job. I know you're busy. But you know what? Like, it does make a difference. And if we can just invest and try our best, even though we're so busy just trying to teach and grade, you know, just invest in our students and not ignore them and say, you are important, I believe in you, and you were in class, and, you know, I really missed you. Like, even hearing that can really
right.
change a person's life. And so we need to walk with our students. We need to hold their hands and say, you know what, you're not alone. Okay, so you didn't do so well today, or you didn't come to class, you skipped. Why did you hang out with your buddies? Okay, so you needed a break. You felt burned out. Okay, come back. I need you back. I need you to stay in school. I need you to do the best you can.
That's right. And I think it's important also for, that's so important for students. They need to know that you care, you're concerned, that you're interested. But you made a good point earlier about getting rid of the burned out faculty, and even in administrators at school who don't seem to get it, or they're just out of touch with what needs to be done. There are so many issues and problems. Let me give you another example. A young lady who told me that she goes to community college here in Maryland, and she's getting ready to graduate. And Dr. Jung Kim, it was just shocking. This young lady cannot write. And when I tell you, she's basically borderline illiterate. And, you know, she's graduating. I'm like, you're graduating from where? And she goes, you know, she told me the name of the school. And I'm like, hey, are you serious? You're graduating this year? And she said, yes. But the thing that I found so disturbing about her was that she was filling out an application and couldn't understand. What was the question? I can't remember what the question was. Oh, her job history. And she asked, did that mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, like, where have you worked? You know, how, you know, like in 2013, where did you work at? What type of work did you do? Your skill sets, you know, on and on. So I'm standing there, meanwhile, I'm waiting at a customer service while she's doing this. So she came back to me again, and she wanted to know if I could read what she wrote. And Dr. Jung Kim, I'm like, you're going to enter this in. I mean, the problem was that the sentence structure, the words, she couldn't even spell. So I told her that she needs to go back to that school and enroll in some type of remedial English or writing course to help her, because she's never going to get a job, Dr. Jung Kim, if she can't fill out the application.
Yeah, and also, another simple thing is, like, you know, I mean, you and I know, but and to us, it would be common sense. When you go for a job interview, you do not wear jeans. You dress up. Men, you wear like a tie. Even if you're just applying to be a clerk or something at a grocery store, you dress professional. These are small things that make a difference. If you care about the way you look, even writing up that resume, you know, like, I know for a lot of students that seems like really intimidating, but even having a resume, where, and you have to think like, yeah, okay, so I know, like, you have to put some sentences in there. It's a lot of work of, like, putting down, like, your work history or the education and all that. But you know what? This is your opportunity to also brag about the stuff that you have done. And, you know, and that's another thing, like, during interviews and during in the resume, students of color are like, oh, I hate bragging about myself. Like, I have not done anything that great. I'm not that great. I have nothing to put down. And they almost feel ashamed to be bragging about themselves, like they're not being humble. And I think we need to change that and say, hey, you're awesome. You know why you're awesome? Well, here are some things that I've seen in you. And, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, I have done that. You're right. Oh, yeah, that's a good perspective. Yeah, I have babysat, and that does show that I have leadership skills and I'm good with money because I didn't just go spend that money. Exactly. So think about what you've done and see all the things you've accomplished, you know, even if it's just a simple thing like babysitting. And when you go for an interview, dress appropriately. You know, make sure your hair looks a certain way. Make sure you dress. Make sure you take a shower. Small things can just make a difference. But again, like, students of color don't always realize, like, small things like that are really important.
Yeah, they don't. They don't. You're
yeah,
right. I agree.
Don't.
And it's sad because sometimes when you start looking around and you see, you know, let me give you, like, other examples. One college campus is I told you this before, I've shared this on the show, where a predominantly white college in Maryland hired me as an associate mm-hmm. professor, and then they sent an email to me after that. One of them wanted me to get involved and work with the girls of color on campus, you know, just to, as a mentor, because she said they really needed the help. And she even admitted they didn't know how to deal with girls of color. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a problem getting involved doing that. Well, then Dr. Jung Kim, when I went to go in to fill out, you know, your HR paperwork and everything, and this is a pretty, you know, prestigious school, I could count the people of color on my one hand. And actually, let me not lie. The only people of color I saw there were the guys at maintenance, the ground crew.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
When I walked into the office, you know, I would say hello, because you know me, I'm very friendly. I'm like, hello, how are you? The white people there were so uncomfortable with me being there, Dr. Jung Kim, until I could feel how uncomfortable they were. And I found it amazing and interesting that they were uncomfortable with this black woman, and they didn't know I was black, because when I arrived for the interview, she was walking up and down the hallway, and I told the young lady that was there to, you know, for interview with, you know, so-and-so, and this woman walked by me like four times. You know, we spoke to each other. And then about 30 minutes later, she goes, oh, my gosh, you're Dr. Colbreth? And it was with complete
wow.
shock and awe.
Oh, my goodness.
Did. And then, you know, she didn't come out and say this. She just basically said in an indirect way, I didn't know you were going to be a black woman. I looked at your CV, and you've done so much outstanding stuff. So basically, she's saying, as a black woman, you've done all this. I'm shocked. And then she said, oh, your voice over the telephone, I would have never dreamed. And then she caught herself. Because you know what she was going to say. And
yeah.
And then they turned around and wanted to know, after that, if I wanted to teach the classes online, which have never been done for them, if I was interested in teaching them online. And then they put in parentheses, this is after all the HR paperwork was done. I was hired, offered the position on the spot, paperwork put through, a week or two weeks later, maybe a little bit longer. Would you be interested in developing and teaching these classes for us online? Parentheses, the preferred method, close parentheses. So what do you think that said to me? And they're mm-hmm. very, like I told you, the people of color on that campus were all the maintenance men and the outside workers who were people of color. Mm-hmm. But I didn't see any faculty members there, and maybe there could have been some. I just didn't see them. But it's like situations like that. Now, for me, you know, I'm very strong in who I am and confident in myself. So when situations like that happen, for me, I find it rather amusing. And I'm saying to myself, wow, this is really bad. Then one of the other black students there said to me after that, you know, it would be so much better if we had more women professors who were women of color.
Mm-hmm.
And she, oh, let me not lie. I mean, I need to see, like, a black professor. I need to see a Spanish professor. I need to see people who are people of color because they can understand. But you know what the problem is, Dr. Jung Kim? And that's another issue we have to look at how students' dreams are deferred or affected, is that when you look at these college campuses and it's predominantly all white, you cannot tell me they're not qualified people of color out there who could be professors at some of these institutions. You cannot tell me that there are not any out there. I would refuse to believe that. And so the other, on the flip side of the coin, we have to also look at when students are going to these schools where they are predominantly white students, you know, all white students, predominantly rather, and then they see the staff, whether teachers, faculty, administrators, whoever, all white, how do you think they feel? I mean, how are they connecting? So if they're going through issues and problems, and there are not people there who they can talk to comfortably about these issues, and nine times out of ten, a lot of these students are not going to go home and say to their parents, you know what, I feel A, B, C, or D. Some may do that, though. But at the end of the day, I think there needs to be more diversity in education. There needs to be more, the curriculums need to be more inclusive of diversity and teaching students to embrace. I think that faculty, staff, students, and administrators need to go through diversity training. And I think when they do the diversity training or they include diversity in whatever shape, form, or fashion, that they remove, using that word, tolerate. And I think they need to have groups, formal and informal groups, as support mechanisms for these students. Like for those students who have to make the video of how they feel and how they're treated at this school, I mean, I would love to have been a fly on the wall when the principal or the superintendent of schools watched that.
Yeah.
You know, so at the end of the day, the students are reaching out. They're saying they need help. They're saying that there is a problem. And, of course, we all know there's always going to be that segment of society who's going to be in denial. Oh, no, these issues don't exist here. It's just like out in Ferguson, Missouri, where the police chief was saying that there's no issue between with the white police officers and the black residents of the town, where everybody else, white and black both, are saying, oh, there are problems. So when people are in denial and they're in key leadership positions where they call the shots, or they make the decisions, that makes it even worse, especially, you know, when students of color have to deal with that. So I think at the end of the day, with regard to how students are being treated because of the color of their skin, their ethnicity, how they look, and even as a young lady in the video noted, she felt like she had to act, look, talk, and, you know, act like a white person just to be accepted, to be considered as being on an even keel or equal with the white students. But my point is this, I don't want to be, and I really wish I could talk to her, because you shouldn't want to be equal with them unless you're talking about the way they're being treated, because that white student could be a C-level student. You can be an A student. But I think what she was basically saying is that she wants to be treated equally across the board. You know, the same treatment, same expectations, same support. That's what they need. And for all of these school systems, if they have not done so, they need to seriously include diversity, you know, in their curriculum. If they don't do that, let me go back and say, correct myself. I believe that if they do include diversity in their curriculums, even if it's a course, even, you know, I really believe that that would help a lot of people realize their own biases, because a lot of people do not realize how they're prejudiced or how they stereotype other people. Peggy McIntyre has that wonderful article she wrote about white privilege. And I've used that in a lot of my diversity classes that I've taught, diversity in the workplace. And I've had students come back to me and say, wow, you know what? I never realized how biased I was, or how I stereotype people, or how I automatically label people. And I'm saying, wow, it's amazing, because none of them, you know, a lot of them, this is the first time they took a diversity course. So when they were taking the course, and it is diversity in the workplace, they were able to then realize, Dr. Jung Kim, that, wow, a lot of things I've said, I've done, the way I think about people who I work with, who are different from me, I have issues and I need to correct them. And which was good. I was glad to hear a lot of the students admit that.
Oh, no, I was going to say, like, in a conversation I was having today in class, was that what you often hear people saying is, I don't think I'm biased or prejudiced at all, because I'm colorblind, and I hate that. I'm colorblind. Or you hear someone saying, well, you know what? I like black people. You know,
yeah, no.
I have a friend that's black.
It's yeah, like,
okay,
that.
So you have a friend that's black, so that makes you understand black people. Well, you know, I'm not racist. I have a black friend. It's like, okay, that doesn't mean anything to me. I mean, it just makes that person feel better to think that they're not racist because of that black friend, but that does not mean you understand them. And, you know, you and I have spoken about, like, you know, learning about, like, black history or Asian history, it's not something that you just learn about, like, during Black History Month or Asian History Month. It should be something that's part of the curriculum in every topic. Like, in math, you could do it as story problems. In English, you could read articles by diverse writers, you know. And as I said before, like, even when I was talking about Black History in February, the month of February, like, so many students said to me, wait a minute, you're talking about black historical leaders. I'm like, yeah, and what they've done here in America or in society. Well, why are you not talking about slavery? I mean, black history is about slavery, right? How blacks were slaves. I'm like, what? Is that really? But that's what people just think. Black History Month is just talking about how blacks were once slaves. It has nothing. That's like the small portion of what black history is, you know? And so in that way, like, we need to keep teaching about, you know, black history, Asian history, all of those different histories, so everyone can understand those who are different from them, and embrace, and, you know, and I don't mean be tolerant, no, but understand and see the uniqueness in their culture and not say that I'm colorblind, which means that you're blind to who they are, the uniqueness of their race. So I don't even like the colorblind expression.
Yeah, I don't like when they say that either. I'm colorblind. I'm like, nah, you're not. Because, and I think that one of the biggest issues, too, with, like, with education, with that hidden prejudice there, I believe that a lot of the people on these college campuses, I really believe they know it's there. They know it is there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And because it's a good old boy system of status quo, this is how things are. I told you when I worked at the college in upstate New York, once I reported the racism and my concern about their inability to embrace diversity and the lack of diversity, I was terminated. I was called, my supervisor called me and terminated me 2 weeks later. He gone on vacation. He'd gone away somewhere. And he came back, and I just only, and his response to me was, oh, that's odd. Now, he's a white male. That's odd because I'm white. You know, I'm saying to myself, he doesn't get this. I work with these people every day, and I don't see it. And my response is, and you won't because you're white. You're not a person of color.
And but, you're a male, yeah.
So he didn't see, and I don't think he would ever see, none of them would realize that their culture there was so racist and so biased, they didn't understand it. They just did not get it. So, you know, I took it to the EEOC.
They don't understand it, and they don't see it being a problem. Like, they think it's just a made-up thing. Racism is something that you made up. You people of color just made up just to complain, because you're always complaining. Angry black woman, angry Asian woman. You just try to find something to complain about.
And if you bring up, and a lot of the issues, too, I think a lot of young people deal with when they're in school, is that they are afraid to bring the issues up. Because if they bring the issues up, it's always like, oh, you're playing the race card. And, you know, there are times when people probably have done that. But a lot of young people also think, well, if I bring up how I feel or the issues that are going on here, I'm going to be accused of playing the race card. So I'll suffer in silence. And I'm like, no, you don't do that. You bring the issues to their attention when they happen, and you stand your ground and you be firm. But to not talk about it and not bring it to the attention. And I remember one young lady said to me, and she was from Virginia, she said, what is the sense of me bringing that point up? Because if I do bring it up, they're not going to do anything about it. They're just going to say I'm another black girl who's mad.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what's sad, Dr. Jung Kim? This young lady was a freshman. And unfortunately, that's exactly, I think, maybe that may be what happened, because that the issue with that school in here in Maryland, you cannot tell me that the administrators and teachers of that school are not aware of the issue. Oh, sorry about that, about the race and color issue. I get the dog's bone. I just think that I just don't see that. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree with you. So many times people say, oh, you're just bringing in the race card. Stop bringing in the race card. Well, the thing that happened, like, that I'm constantly talking to my friend about, that I'm still, even though it happened 3 weeks ago, is, I mean, I teach at another college in Illinois, and, I talked about race issues, and I had a bunch of students, like, who looked at me and said, racism does not exist in America. I didn't know what to say. I think I was very shocked at the fact that they really firmly believed that racism does. And I was like, oh, so what do you think racism, what is racism? Like, what do you think, why are people of color complaining, or what are they talking about when they're saying that there's injustice? Well, yeah, so that's a made-up thing that they just want to complain about, because things aren't going their way. They just want to keep taking the government's money, or take our seats in the college setting, based off their race. So they're constantly calling the race card just to get their way. But you know, I'm like, so you think, you know, black people are all druggies and gang members and they're not smart? Well, you know, I'm sure there's smart people out there, but, you know, most of them, so their idea of black people is like the people who live in the South Side in the ghetto, who eat fried chicken, they even said. And that floored me, that they were that blind and they were 18 and 19 years old, and that they had been living in a bubble for this long to think racism does not exist in America. It's a made-up term.
Yes, I've heard that too, and I find that interesting that they, and you know why? Because they haven't been exposed. They've never been taught. And I really believe also, I mean, even if you just watch the news, you don't even see it on the news. You don't. They try not to talk about it. One station, MSNBC, they do talk about race issues and racism a lot, which I applaud them for that. But a lot of these young people, they're oblivious to what's really going on around them. And it's sad because when they told you they don't believe racism exists, they are being honest with you.
Yeah. And I said, like, why do we not see, like, a lot of, for example, why do we not see a lot of, where do you see black students if they're in college? Oh, they play on the football team. Okay. And do blacks go to college, like, you know, compared to other racial groups? No. Well, why not? Well, because they want to take our government money. They want to sell drugs, and that's their way. They just want to make money the quick way, through stealing and through selling drugs. They're not interested in education. Or they just want to go out and have sex. You know, like, I'm like, that's your idea of black people. And I'm like, what about Asian people? What do you think they do, like, in society? Oh, well, you know, they open our Chinese restaurants. They run our dry cleaners. Maybe you'll see someone, an Asian Indian, like, at a Dunkin' Donuts. I'm like, it's all typecasting. Well, you guys watch too much TV. You need to open your eyes that racism exists. It was hard for me to hold back from lecturing, but I am bringing more things to, like, open their mind, let's say, each week in the classes. But for them to, I thought they were joking. I was giving them plenty of opportunities to talk their way out of it and explain it to me, especially since I'm an Asian woman who teaches a class. But they firmly said, no, this is a made-up term. It doesn't exist. I mean, it's just a made-up term that angry black, Hispanic, Asian people have made up. to give them opportunities to take our seats in college, to take our jobs.
Wow, unbelievable. And they believe that, you know that. They really believe what they're saying. And
yeah.
It's sad. Well, Dr. Duncan, this has been a great discussion. I think we shed a lot of light on the issues and
yeah.
how students of color, you know, how their dreams are really affected because of race, color, and prejudices. And I think it serves as a beacon to start that dialogue or continue the dialogue on why it's so important to have diversity in education across the board, from students learning and embracing it to faculty, staff, and administrators. Even if the parents would get involved and have some type of coalition where they connected, you know, a couple times during the year to understand and embrace. But until we see more of that taking place, I think we're going to continue to see a lot of issues with our students of color. But as long as people like you and I and the others out here who are really working hard to make a difference, because it would be so nice if we can get people to understand that they're wasting time with the prejudicial attitudes, negatively
yeah.
stereotyping people, judging them because of their race or their color. I mean, what do they hope to accomplish? And
mm-hmm.
as someone said to me before, well, you know what they hope to accomplish. It's keeping people of color down in a lower level position. But my concern is that we live in a society, like you noted earlier, Dr. Jung Kim, where people of color are now the majority. And I find it ironic that we are the majority, but we're not reaching the higher ground in the keynote positions. We don't see a lot of economic wealth in our communities. We see too many of our communities ridden with crime and drugs and violence. And I think there's so much work that needs to be done. You know, when it goes to the village, the whole village is responsible. But my main concern is the young people, the children, because they're our future generations. And if we don't help them reach that higher ground, we're going to go back to seeing, you know, just a certain segment of the haves and the have-nots. And we live in a society right now, we shouldn't even see that any longer. It's just like the issues we see, the arguments over immigration. That floors me. It literally floors me. And there are a lot of my students, especially in Washington, D.C., were immigrant students. And, I mean, I had such a good rapport. We have, built, a rapport with these students where the issues that they had to deal with on campus also, where they were also marginalized and treated differently. So there are a lot of issues in education that we need to talk about, from diversity to the immigration issue to learning to quality education. There's so much that needs to be done to make sure that there are mechanisms and support tools in place to help students of color either deal with the psychological issues that they deal with because of the race and color and stereotypes, and the emotional and the physical and the social. They need the support to know that, okay, we're here, we're supporting you, it's going to be okay. You have anything else you want to add before we close?
No, not at all. I think we've covered everything. I mean, well, if anything, just, you know, I would go as far as to say, like, this is an epidemic. And because it's an epidemic, we really need to, seriously, like, today is even too late. But we need to take steps forward to really help our students to be successful and to give them the opportunities and say that they can be successful in school and in the workforce. And, you know, even point out that, you know, the easy way of just getting, you know, a job is not going to really help them to be successful, to climb that ladder of success. Like that, you know, a little bit of sacrifice of staying in school and graduating and having a college degree, like, can really go much further than, you know, the 9-to-5 job where they're working these long hours to make money, but, you know, forgetting about their education. And I just think, like, more mentorship, more conversations need to be happening.
I agree. Excellent. Okay, listeners, what I'm going to do is let me go over some announcements for you to give you an update of what's going on with all of Dr. Jung Kim and I's projects. With the Colorism listserv that has launched, it's a listserv where you can subscribe to with your email address, and we'll send you updates and information on issues, topics, calls for submissions if someone needs help with their research study, to get involved, So that is launched. You can find information about that on the colorism, .com, Colorism Project website. And then, as you all know, in 2015, Dr. John Kim and I, we declared 2015 as the year to celebrate, embrace, and empower girls and women of color. And as of January of this year, we've launched this really awesome campaign, and we're still working on it. We're in collaboration with I Am Beautiful Global and the National Girls and Women of Color Council, in collaboration with the Journal of Colorism Studies. We have a call for submissions out to submit essays that focus in on girls and women of color. And you can find details, again, on the Journal of Colorism website, which is jocsonline.org, or you can find it on the Colorism WordPress blog. With regard to National Girls and Women of Color Council, Dr. John Kim and I will be putting out tonight a notice where we're looking for members to join our board of directors, as well as for volunteers to work with task force committees to serve as chairpersons. Our website is launched. It's ngwcc.org. And we'll be tweeting under at ngwcc information about that. Don't forget our books out there, Live Life Beautiful Affirmations for Girls of Color, is available in a paperback from Complexity Publishing. The ebook is all over, probably at every possible ebook site. And Dr. John Kim, they also have it now in other languages, which is really good.
Yeah, that's awesome.
With Live Life Fabulous, again, that book is also, Living Life Fabulous at 50, Affirmations for Women of Color, that book is also available through Complexity Publishing, as well as on the ebook sites. Other than that, I think I've covered everything, haven't I, Dr. John Kim? I think I did.
Yeah, you've covered everything, yeah.
So, listeners, thank you for tuning in. We've enjoyed this. We look forward to you, you know, contacting us if you have questions, you want to get involved with NGWCC. Don't forget the call for submissions for essays on celebrating, embracing, and empowering girls and women of color. And we thank you for tuning in. Have a great week. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll see you next Thursday. Good night, everyone.
Bye. Good night.
Thank you for joining us for the Dynamics of Colorism with your host, Dr. Donna Maria Colbreth. You may contact Dr. Colbreth at 866-829-0163. We are looking forward to you tuning in next Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Until then, remember, dare to be different and dream in color. For Dr. Colbreth and the Dynamics of Colorism, this is Heidi S. Brown signing off. Good night, everyone.